Is Australian business investing enough in the Asian region? A report released this week by the Committee for Economic Development of Australia, CEDA, found that Australian business prefers investment with the US, the UK and New Zealand, while investment opportunity goes begging in the Asian region. Now, the report makes recommendations on how to change this pattern, particularly as protectionism rises in the US and Britain, and the Australian economy moves beyond the mining boom. This point was made somewhat aggravatedly, I thought, earlier this month by the former Trade Minister Andrew Robb when he told a Darwin gathering that there was a perception that Australia had made significant inroads into the Chinese markets through food exports, and of course he was responsible for all those trade deals. But in reality, he said, and I quote, "We've hardly got a cent invested in these countries in the region." Joining me now as a contributor to the CEDA report, Andrew Parker. He's the PwC Asia practice leader and a partner at the firm. Welcome, Andrew.
Good morning, Geraldine.
There's always interest about in foreign investment here coming in. This is what makes the headlines. But the nature of the country's outbound investment, not trade, but investment, has received less attention. What are the levels like?
Well, they're actually really very low, stunningly low. If you look at the numbers, you know, Australia has invested $60 billion in investment into New Zealand at the end of 2015. In the ASEAN region, so the 10 countries that make up ASEAN in Southeast Asia, that number is $38 billion. And then if you add to that China, Japan, South Korea and India, you still get a number which is less than what we've invested in New Zealand. Now, that doesn't feel right.
Well, in fact, you say that 2.9% only, I mean, it's staggering, of Australia's total outbound investment goes to China and India.
Yes, that's right. And if you think about, you know, our economic modelling is suggesting that in just 15 years from today, four of the world's five largest economies, Japan, China, India, and Indonesia will be in our region if you measure that by purchasing power parity terms. Yet our investment goes to the countries in North America and Europe, which have very low growth rates. Asia, as we know, very rapid growth rates. And in fact, in that 15-year time period, will be more than half of the world's economic output, over 3 billion consumers in the region.
Now, this might surprise people, I think, listening to this, because we hear a lot about our meat and live cattle exports, for instance, and successful agribusinesses and a lot of high-profile companies like the vitamin company Swisse that might create the impression that we're doing pretty well.
We're doing well on the export side. So six of our top 10 trading partners are in the region. So we're exporting our product to the region. And that's fantastic news for Australian producers. The thing is that what we're missing out on, though, is the enormous intra-regional trade. So there's a lot of business which happens in the region. And as the incomes of people in the region grow, they consume more. They consume more services. So our exports have been built around the bulk commodities. So we put coal, iron ore, wheat on boats and we send that to Asia. Mm. And we've done incredibly well doing that over the last 25 years. But as those economies grow and people become wealthier in the region, they consume more services. Now, you can't export those services. So things like financial services, engineering, architects, accounting services, those kinds of things, you've actually got to be in the region, invested in the region where the consumers are, if you want to sell those services to the consumer.
See, I mean, the road to Asia, though, is littered with stories of failure, isn't it? And there are some very interesting stories in the report about losing money and reputation because of a lack of preparation. There's an interesting study, for instance, about the Australian brand Bundaberg Brewed Drinks, which rushed into China in the early 2000s, didn't understand local practices, and then combined with customs and supply chain breakdowns, it really didn't turn out well at all. So, and I mean, we can talk about the ANZ Bank. I always find that such a fascinating story. They did that big outreach, and now they've pulled right back. So how do you contextualise that?
Look, there is absolutely no doubt that the markets in the region are quite difficult. And in fact, one thing that we do need to keep in mind is that Asia is not one place. It is many, many different places. It's home to lots of different languages, religions, political systems, social systems. And in terms of the world, you know, the World Bank's Ease of Doing Business Index, Singapore sits at number one, Myanmar at 177. And there are countries all the way in between across the region. So it is a challenging environment to do business. There's no question about that. The thing is, though, that if you go back to my initial proposition that more than half of the world's economic output will be produced in this region in just 15 years from today, you know, Australia actually has to, and Australian businesses actually have to find ways to be successful. And we know, you know, when you look at our investment in the region, by any measure, it is underdone. And it's underdone in comparison to our investment in our traditional markets. It's underdone in comparison to our investment in our key trading partners. And we're way behind other countries. The European Union countries, the US and Japan have all invested significantly more in Asia than Australia has.
And I've seen that over the years and wondered about whether there's a certain private equity, like there's big private money and stores of capital in those older countries, which they can, in a way, it might sound odd, they can afford to lose. I mean, they don't want to, of course, but I just wonder whether you've got to have a different base to go in there with safety.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's a very different environment. And being successful there requires a lot of time. It requires very diligent preparation. It requires a lot of thought, and you've got to be patient. It is a long term investment. But I think, you know, for Australian companies, we have to look at where the future is, and we've got to find a way to be successful in this region.
One of the other things before I let you go, I noticed, for instance, that the report Leading for Change finds that 77% of ASX 200 CEOs are from Anglo-Celtic cultural backgrounds. So, I mean, I wonder if this is part of it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the same study also identified that only 8 of our ASX 200 companies have directors from an Asian cultural background. So, you know, we have 17%
even
of
directors.
Our, yeah, so 17% of our population identifies as coming from an Asian cultural background. So I think there's, you know, there is some real fundamental questions that Australia can ask itself about our diversity and whether we really are using the resources that we've got and the capability and talent we have in this country in a way that enables us to be successful in the region.
There's lots more to come on this, but Andrew, thank you for giving us a snapshot, and it'll be interesting to see how CEDA discusses it. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Andrew Parker is a contributor to the CEDA report into Australia's outbound investment. He's a partner and head of Asia practice at PwC, and your thoughts most welcome on this, because I know that you're a pretty Asia-literate bunch who listen to Saturday Extra, and I'd really love to hear your thoughts. Remember, we did that big piece about people working in Asia about a good 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe it's time to refresh it.